And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome. Yes, it is that time again. Welcome back to Hands-On Apologetics, the Virgin Most Powerful Radio's Apologetics Dojo, where the rubber of catechesis meets the road of everyday life. And as you have heard on the announcement, I'm Gary Matuta, your friendly neighborhood host and sensei, talking about how to defend the faith, how to explain the faith, how to share the faith with others. And we have a fantastic show in store for you, not only today, but I was just looking at the roster for next week. It's going to be incredible, but we'll talk more about that at the end of the show. Coming up in today's show, we have our Master Apologist, Carlo Brissard, for Catholic Answers. He's going to be joining us. And if you've been following this show, you know Carlo's been a guest sensei here for several times. And we've been going through different aspects of his book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And, you know, Carlo is just an incredible apologist. I love his approach. You know, like I probably should stop saying it, but to me, it's the perfect analogy. His apologetics is like a Lamborghini or some high-performance auto, where on the outside, it's sleek and smooth and it's simple, you know, very pleasing to look at, to inspect. But man, once Carlo pops open the hood, he's got some really high-tech, high-performance stuff going on underneath the hood. So I love listening to him, and I'm glad he's going to be coming back because we're going to be talking about proving the existence of God. How in the world do you do that? Well, Carlo's going to help maneuver us into how to explain that rather sticky subject. And also, we're going to dive into finding the fallacy. And since today's Friday, of course, we try to move away from informal logical fallacies and look at propaganda techniques. And today's technique is called snob appeal. And I think you can kind of get a guess where that propaganda technique, what it's aimed at. And as always, we're going to meet the early church fathers. And today's early church father is Cyril of Jerusalem. Very important early church father, not only in apologetics, but just has given us some great writings. So you don't want to miss it. Those two segments should be loads and loads of fun. As always, you can join our conversation, especially when Carlo joins us at 888-526-2151. And that's 888-526-2151. And I have to give my apologies. If you call into the program, please be patient, because I try to get to the phones as soon as possible. But often I have to try to finish thoughts, or maybe I have a guest who needs to finish a thought before a break. So you might be on hold. But we'll try our best to get to you, and we'll deal with that as it comes. So again, 888-526-2151. Or if you'd like to email us your questions, give us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. That's questions@handsonapologetics.com. And as you probably heard, the dojo is going to be heading out west in February 20th. Actually, the beginning of that week, all the way up to the 20th, I'm going to be visiting the world headquarters of Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And it's going to be fun. I can't wait to go out to California, not only because it is cold and snowy here in southeast Michigan, and chances are it'll be a bit warmer out there, but I get to meet a lot of the people that I admired and listened to over the years, like Terry Barber and Matthew Arnold, and meet the other guys, the rest of the gang there. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm especially looking forward to a talk that I'm going to give on the 20th. And again, for those who live in southwest California, anywhere in California, anywhere in southwest United States, you are invited to come to the historic Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina, because I'm going to be there, and I'm going to give, like I said, one of the most important talks in my repertoire, because it's I'm going to give you a key to help unlock Bible apologetics, how to communicate Catholic truth through Scripture in a way that Protestants will understand. And one question that came up in the dojo mailbox that I should cover right now is somebody asked me, should I invite my Protestant brothers and sisters to the talk? And I answer, you can. There's going to be lots of good stuff. I'm going to have all my books. I'm going to have my CDs. But I found that when non-Catholics attend this talk, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to them. And the reason is because I'm going to train you, Catholics, how to explain the faith to non-Catholics. And so it's kind of like, I don't know, it would be as if you were an English-speaking person who attended a class in France teaching French people how to teach English. You know, it would be very confusing. And so I noticed that I've talked to Protestants and they had difficulty understanding what was going on because I was looking at it really from a Catholic perspective. So I don't know if it'd be that helpful for them, but it'd certainly be helpful for anyone who wants to explain or defend the faith. So that's important to keep in mind. So why don't we jump to our exercises? The Finding the Fallacy segment is actually a piece of propaganda. This called snob appeal. What is snob appeal? Well, it's an attempt to appeal to the general public's aspirations to belong to society's high class, the hoity-toity, you know, the quiche and you know, tea sipping class of society. And you know, by tapping into that aspiration, they're able to kind of sneak underneath our critical radar and motivate us to buy something or believe something or do something. Okay. So how they do it is quite simple. Basically, what they want to do is give the proposition that somehow if you do these things or own these things or believe these things, that's your golden ticket to be a member of the elite class. Okay. Now, this is common in advertisement. It is sort of common elsewhere, but I think it's particularly used in advertisements. For example, you know, how many times have we seen products being advertised where they have some well-known celebrity dressed in a tuxedo or an evening gown, you know, drinking, you know, a soda or a kind of a mineral water or whatever. Or perhaps sports figures driving high-performance cars, you know, that will plug some sort of product or some other high-profile official. And, you know, and the idea is, wow, I could be just like that person if I only did the things they did. You know, if I buy this product, then I could see myself, you know, driving a sports car and, you know, dressing up in high class clothing or whatever. So that's our fallacy, or really propaganda for today. It's called snob appeal. And of course, you know, the thing is with most propaganda techniques, and even with some logical fallacies, the way to refute it is once you recognize it's being used, it's like taking a pin and popping a balloon. It loses all its effectiveness. All right. It's time for Meet the Early Church Father. Today's Early Church Father is Cyril of Jerusalem. Cyril lived between AD 315 and AD 386. The time and place of his birth is unknown, but he was in Jerusalem around that period, you know, in the early 300s. He was Bishop of Jerusalem in 348 AD and was consecrated bishop there by the Metropolitan of Caesarea. But unfortunately, due to suspicions aroused by an Arian, Cyril's bishopric was a rocky one, because many people thought that he perhaps made concessions to Arianism, which he didn't. Actually, Cyril was a strong defender of Nicene doctrine. But the problem is he was one of the few Orthodox teachers who believed Nicene Creed, but preferred the term homoiousios versus homoousios. Now, what in the world is that? That's Greek to you, right? Well, it, basically the term is like substance to the Father versus same substance, okay? That Jesus is like substance to same substance. The Arians believed that Jesus was like substance. Well, the Orthodox Nicene Creed says that he's the same substance as the Father. So, but the thing is, he used homoiousios, like substance, but he used it in an Orthodox sense. And that's really the cause of most of his problems. It was a rocky road because of suspicions because of that. But nevertheless, he enjoyed peace during his declining years and regained his see in 378 AD. And after the death of Emperor Valens, he continued on in Jerusalem without problems until his death in 386. And, of course, we know Cyril by his most famous work, which is called Catechetical Lectures. And if you haven't read this, folks, I highly recommend getting it. You can get it free online, like if you go to newadvent.org, for example, and look under Early Church Fathers. You can read it for yourself. And it's basically 24 discourses that he gives to pre-baptismal and neophytes during Easter week. And it's loaded with good teaching. Very, very interesting writing indeed. So that's our Early Church Father today, Cyril of Jerusalem. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to Master Apologist Carlo Brassard about explaining the existence of God. Stay tuned, everybody.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Well, as I promised, we are going to welcome Master Apologist Carlo Brassard, who is a native of Crowley, Louisiana. Carlos, for more than a decade, traveled the country teaching apologetics, biblical studies, theology, and philosophy. He's published articles in a variety of magazines, including Catholic Answers magazine. You probably are familiar with him because he's a regular guest on Catholic Answers Live and an active blogger at Catholic.com. And Carlos wrote an incredible book, which I highly recommend everybody immediately pick up. And the book is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Carlo, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Hey, Gary. Thanks for having me, brother. It's always great to be on with you.
Oh, yes. I tell you, you know, you liven up the entire dojo when you come here and teach us your moves.
Thank you very much, Gary. I enjoy being in the dojo. It's quite a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, Carlo, we're kind of going through your book. I mean, this book is so good, everybody. You need to get it because he breaks down the arguments so well. And I know one thing that a lot of solid Catholics dread is someone challenging them with the question that, or actually just saying there's no good arguments for the existence of God.
Right.
How should a Catholic answer that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think we could ask the individual, well, which kind of evidence are you looking for? You know, what's the type of evidence that you're allowing into the courtroom in order to prove God guilty of existing, right? And many times what you'll find, Gary, and I think we've spoken about this on a previous segment when we were talking and chatting, many times they will be thinking or looking for only scientific evidence. And because they don't have any sort of empirical evidence that God exists, therefore they conclude, well, God doesn't exist since science can't detect him, right? We can't use the methods of modern science in order to detect God. And so therefore, many conclude God must not exist. But unfortunately, as we've spoken in the past, that approach is operating on the assumption of the philosophical view of scientism, which states science is the only means by which we can come to know objective reality. Science alone gives us genuine knowledge about what is real. And we've refuted scientism in the past, showing that the belief that scientific knowledge is the only real form of knowledge is self-defeating, because that belief itself is not the product of scientific inquiry. You can't use the methods of modern science in order to come to the conclusion of the truth value of scientism itself. Right. And so therefore, according to its own principle, it's not real knowledge, so it's self-defeating. So once we get that out the way, and we get the individual to see, okay, well, if you can't be looking for the scientific evidence in order to prove that God exists, granted, there might be some scientific evidence out there that might give a credible person good reason to think that there's an intelligent creator out there, but it wouldn't be a proof for God's existence. If you're looking for evidence to prove God's existence, like a philosophical demonstration, well, then you're going to have to put the tool of science back in the tool shed and take out the tool of philosophy and engage in philosophy in order to answer the question, does God exist? And be able to answer that with metaphysical certitude, right, or philosophical certitude. And so that's what I do in one of the chapters in my book, I think particularly chapter 6, where I give a step-by-step approach of a philosophical demonstration that God must exist. And basically what it does, Gary, is we have to it starts from mundane experience of the tree outside. But then it immediately jumps on a cerebral level. It jumps to the metaphysical plane, which for many folks, it's a bit difficult because we're not used to thinking on the metaphysical level, right? We're so trained to think only within the modern methods of science and empirical investigation, mathematical quantification, et cetera, and measuring things, quantifiably measuring things. So it is a bit difficult for some to be engaging in metaphysical thought, but what I tried to do in the book, Gary, is to try to break it down in a simple way to lead someone step by step in this sort of metaphysical or philosophical thinking process. And so what I do in step one is we start with the tree outside, right? And it's as easy as saying the tree exists rather than not exists, right? I mean, that's pretty easy. You don't have to have a PhD to realize that. The tree outside exists, and notice that it's distinguished from nothing. Now, for St. Thomas Aquinas, we have to ask, you know, well, what is it that distinguishes the tree from nothing? What is it that makes it be rather than not be? Well, for Aquinas, it's the act of being itself. In Latin, it's esse, to be. It's the act of being, that which distinguishes the tree from nothing. Okay, so once we sort of have that in mind, yeah, okay, this tree has existence. It has an active being that's distinguishing it from nothing. Well, then in step two, we have to ask, Gary, okay, well, does this tree have existence by nature or not? Now, this is where it gets a little bit tricky for some, Gary, but I think most people can get it. And what I mean by does the tree have existence by nature? It's analogous to saying, okay, when we think of a triangle, does the triangle have three straight sides by nature? And I think you would agree with me, Gary, that the answer to that question is yes, because that's what it means to be a triangle, right?
Right.
Yep. To have three straight sides. So notice how three straight sides belongs to the very essence, to the very nature of the triangle itself, okay?
Okay.
But if I were to ask you, Gary, well, this triangle over here, this triangle over here that's red, it's the color red, does redness belong to the essence of the triangle? Like, does it belong to what a triangle is to be red?
No.
No, it doesn't, not at all, because a triangle could be blue, a triangle could be black, a triangle could be yellow, right? Mm-hmm. So notice that these colors don't belong to what a triangle is, like three straight sides does, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, analogously, we come back to the tree's existence, and we ask the question, well, does the tree have existence by nature? Like, does it belong to what a tree is in order for that tree to have existence? Does existence belong to what a tree is, like the three straight sides belongs to what a tree is? And when we reflect upon that question, Gary, we come to the conclusion, well, no, that tree outside can't have existence by nature. Like, it doesn't belong to what it is to exist, because if that were the case, well, then there could never be a time when the tree didn't exist. But we know there was a time in the past when the tree didn't exist, and we know there's a time in the future when the tree won't exist. So apparently, the tree doesn't have existence by nature, like a triangle has three straight sides by nature, because you can never have a time when you have a triangle that's not three straight sides, right?
That's true.
Why?
So, tree's nature was its existence, then the tree would be eternal, because as long as it's a
that's
tree,
right.
It would exist.
There could never be a time when the tree did not exist.
Gotcha.
So that the tree came into existence at some point in the past, that the tree will go out of existence at some point in the future, that's a clue, that's an indication to us that that tree and what it is distinct from that it is, its existence. That's a clue and an indication that the tree, that existence, doesn't belong to the tree's nature, like three straight sides belongs to a triangle's nature. Okay, so the bottom line being that is there is a distinction, there's a difference between what the tree is, its essence or its nature, and that it is, its existence, its active being. Okay, now here's one more step before we can formulate our argument for God's existence, Gary, and that is to say anything that doesn't have its existence by nature, like the tree outside, must receive its existence from a cause outside itself. So if we're thinking about the nature of the tree, what the tree is, we say, okay, that tree's nature is not to exist. Existence doesn't belong to its nature. It's distinct from its nature. And so it's going to have to receive that act of existence from something outside itself, right? It can't receive it from itself because it would be causing itself to exist. Well, as Aquinas points out, something can't cause itself to exist because it would have to be existing and not existing in the same respect, the same place and time, which violates the principle of non-contradiction, right?
Right, right.
And we can't say that, oh, well, the tree's essence now has existence for no reason whatsoever. That is to say the brute fact approach and say that there is nothing that gave the tree existence. Yeah, sure, the tree doesn't have existence by nature, but nor is it the case that any cause gave it existence. So there is nothing. What this brute fact position amounts to is saying there is nothing to distinguish the tree having a real relation to existence from the tree not having a real relation to existence. You see? Because there's no cause. The brute fact approach says there's nothing that gave the tree existence, but it has existence. It's just a brute fact. But here's the problem with that, Gary. See if you can follow me on this one. If I say that there is nothing to distinguish the tree having a real relation to existence from the tree not having a real relation to existence, well, then there would be identity, right? The state of being of the tree having a real relation to existence would be identical to the state of the tree be not having a real relation to existence, because where there is no difference, there is identity. If there is nothing to distinguish A from B, well, then A would be B, correct? Does that make sense? If there's yes. Not, or let me try a different letter because that was a bit confusing. if there is nothing to distinguish A from C, well, then A would be C. They would be identical, okay?
Right.
Now, let's take that principle and apply it to the brute fact approach. If there is nothing to distinguish the state of the tree having a real relation to existence from the state of the tree not having a real relation to existence, well, then the two states would be identical. The tree okay. would not have a real relation to existence. But that's absurd because the tree does have a real relation to existence in as much as it exists. So the conclusion is that there must be something, some cause that distinguishes the tree having a real relation to existence from not having a real relation to its existence. Therefore, it must have a cause for why it has the act of existence. And then we can formulate the argument after that.
All right, very good. Well, stay tuned, everybody, because we'll bring it all that in and show how it points to God. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of breaking the Bible barrier, why Catholic appeals to the Bible fail, and how to make them successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. Yes, we're talking about the existence of God with Master Apologist Carla Brassard, and we're talking about trees. And oddly enough, just by staring at a tree, you can actually lead, you know, through consideration to that God must necessarily exist. And Carla, you know, you've done such a great job showing that the tree, you know, it doesn't by its nature give its own existence. It has to receive that existence from outside of itself. Otherwise, it would always be. It would be a necessary tree, right?
Right.
And then so if it doesn't come from within its own essence, then this existence has to come from without. And I think that's kind of where we left off, right?
That's correct, yeah. I was trying to give a defense of why we say that if the tree doesn't have existence by nature, that is to say, if its nature is not identical to its active being, or its essence is not identical to existence itself, well, then it would have to receive existence from some cause outside of itself. We couldn't just say, oh, well, it's a brute fact. Yeah, sure, its essence and existence is not identical, but there is no cause for its existence. So we can't say that, because otherwise we're going to violate that principle that states where there is no difference, there is identity. And if we use that fundamental principle of reason, we can show that the tree is going to need a cause outside of itself, whatever that cause may be. We don't really need to go into the details of what it is. We just know it needs a cause in order to receive its existence. And whatever that cause is, Gary, just for simplicity's sake, let's call it an existential cause. That is to say, a cause of existence, a cause of the act of existence. And once we get these preliminary principles in place, then we're able to formulate an argument in a syllogistic form, Gary. And here's how we can put it. Here's how we can structure it. Premise one, if everything were caused to exist by something else, like the tree outside, right? Mm-hmm. Then there would be an infinite series of existential caused causes. Right. So, you know, everything. So we got the tree being caused by existential cause A. But then we have to ask the question, OK, well, is existential cause A, is its nature identical to existence or not? If it's not identical to existence, that is to say, if its essence is distinct from its existence, well, then like the tree, this cause, existential cause A, is going to need a cause of its existence. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And we can call that cause existential cause B. And then we say, okay, well, is existential cause B's essence identical to existence, or is it distinct? If it's distinct, like the tree, like cause A, well, then guess what? Cause B is going to need a cause of its existence. Okay. So if everything were caused to exist by something else, then there would be an infinite series of existential caused causes. Premise two, but there cannot be an infinite series of existential caused causes. Therefore, not everything can be caused to exist by something else. There must exist at least one existential cause, a cause of existence, that doesn't have to receive its existence from something outside itself, what we call an uncaused cause. Such a cause, its essence would be identical to existence, and that's what we call God. So that's the syllogism. Okay. So then in the book, I proceed in explaining each of the premises.
Okay, very good.
Would you like me to elaborate?
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know if you're going to elaborate. Yeah, actually, you are. You're going to talk about essentially order things. But I think people need to keep in mind that we're not talking about a cause like what caused the tree to exist. Well, it was a seed that fell from a sapling or something like that. It's really what's causing it to exist this second, this moment, right?
Well, see, yeah, that's the next step. You see, and this is in the next step, Gary, I articulate what kind of series of existential caused causes are we talking about, okay? Because some people might think of, okay, well, yeah, the type of series of causes we're talking about is like, okay, well, you know, I was generated by my father, and he was generated by his father, my granddaddy, and so, yeah, that's what philosophers call that an accidentally ordered series, which simply means that the generating activity of my granddaddy, right, is not necessary for the generating activity of me. My granddad is long gone, but guess what? I can still have my power to generate, all right? So this is an accidentally ordered series as opposed to what we call an essentially ordered series. An essentially ordered series of causes would be to say, hypothetically, my granddaddy's generating activity would be essential right here and right now for me to be engaging in generating activity. But obviously that's not the case, right?
Or that'd be weird.
Here's another example. Yeah, that would be weird. Here's another example. The lamp being held up right now by the link in the chain right above the little hook there is at the same time being held up by the link before it and by the link before it and by the link before it. And all the links in the chain hooked up to the hook in the ceiling. So all of those links in the chain right here and right now are essential to explaining why the lamp is being suspended in midair right here and right now. So think of it more so in a vertical manner as opposed to a horizontal manner. Or even if we do employ a horizontal image, we could use a series of train cars where you have the caboose, which is being moved by the car in front of it. And that car is right here and right now being moved by the car in front of it. But ultimately speaking, Gary, all of the cars in the series of train cars are being moved by the engine car, right? Because no car in the series of train cars has the power to move itself. It receives or it derives that motion from the train car, from the engine car, which has the power to move itself in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of series of caused causes that we're talking about, where every cause in the series right here and right now is dependent upon every other cause in the series in order for the tree to exist. Or you might say the tree's existence right here and right now is dependent upon the very existence and causing power of every single cause in the series right here and right now. So that's the type of series of existential caused causes that we are proposing or thinking of as trying to explain why the tree exists rather than not exists. And it's that type of causal series, Gary, that we're saying cannot exist without an existential cause that doesn't derive existence. It's that type of series that we are saying cannot regress infinitely without an existential cause that's uncaused. And so that leads us to the next step. So that brings up the question, okay, well, why is it that the tree cannot be depending upon a series of existential caused causes without an existential cause that doesn't derive existence from something outside of itself, without an uncaused cause? And I think here's where the train car example might come into play to help, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To say that the tree, its existence, to say that the tree's existence is dependent upon an infinite number of existential caused causes without an existential cause that's uncaused, would be akin to saying that the caboose is being moved by an infinite number of train cars that have no motion within themselves without an engine car. So if you have the caboose and it's being moved by the train car in front of it, which is being moved by the train car in front of it, okay, and we're going to say, well, there's an infinite number of those interlinked train cars, but no engine car. Would the caboose move? Would there be any motion in the series whatsoever? I think we can say, well, no, the answer would be no. Why? Because no matter where you're at in the series, Gary, no matter which car you pick in that link of train cars, that car is not going to have motion because it doesn't have motion to give. And it has, and there's no car from which it can receive motion. Does that make sense?
Right.
Since there's
fact,
no engine,
you know,
car, right?
Carlos, so let's just say you have a train track that's a circle, right? That's infinite, no beginning, no end.
Right.
And if it's right, all caboosei or cabooses or whatever the plural is, and all of them are hooked all the way around the circle, there is no
right
reason why that thing should move unless something moves it, right? Because it doesn't have
and
power
the re-
to
and
do
the
it.
Reason is, and the reason is because no car within that infinite circle has motion to give to any other car. The point being is that there is no source from which these cars can derive motion.
Right.
Because no car has motion within itself to give.
Right.
Now, if we take that line of reasoning and we apply it to existence itself and causes of existence leading up to the existence of the tree, if we have a series of existential caused causes, now remember, what is an existential caused cause? Okay, that's going to be a cause that's causing something else to exist, but it itself, its essence is distinct from its existence and therefore is deriving existence from something else. Okay, so in a series of existential caused causes, no cause has existence by nature. Okay.
Right.
Now, if no cause in the series has existence by nature, well, then we have to ask the question, whence would existence come?
Okay.
If there's, oh, I hear the music. So
yeah,
the other side of
that's
the
a good cliffhanger.
We'll tie a pretty bow on that.
Yeah, exactly. What a great cliffhanger. Where does the existence come from, folks? Stay tuned on the other side of the break. Carlo's going to explain what is the source that imparts existence to the tree that's outside.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of breaking the Bible barrier, why Catholic appeals to the Bible fail, and how to make them successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matsuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Master Apologist Carla Brassard on explaining God's existence. And we're talking about trees and trains. It's incredibly simple at one level, but it's also takes a little bit of heavy lifting by the intellect, doesn't it, Carlo?
Indeed it does. I mean, because we're starting with mundane things, but then we're employing metaphysical principles or the philosophical principles in order to try and explain those mundane things. So where we left off is we were asking the question, why can't we have an infinite series of existential caused causes? And I think it's key, once again, Gary, to remember, what do we mean by an existential – what do we mean by something that's caused, first of all? What we mean is something whose essence is distinct from its existence. That is to say, it doesn't have existence by nature. And if that is the case, then it's going to need a cause outside of itself from which it can derive its existence. And right. But if that cause itself – it doesn't have existence by nature, within it too will have to derive its existence from some cause outside of itself. So by an existential cause, we mean a cause of the existence of something else, which itself is deriving its existence from something else, a cause whose essence is distinct from its existence. Now, why is it that we can't have an infinite series of these kinds of causes in order to explain why the tree exists rather than not exist right here and right now? And the fundamental answer, Gary, is that no cause in the series would have existence by nature in order to give. Just like if you have an infinite number of train cars without an engine car, you have no car with motion to give. You have no car from which the series can derive motion. So too, with an infinite number of existential causes, an infinite number of causes whose existence is distinct from essence, then you would have no cause from which to derive existence. There would be no source from which existence could be derived. Why? Because no cause in the series has existence by nature. Right. And if there's no source from which existence can be derived, well, then no cause in the series would have existence, and thus the tree would not exist, because you need the causes to exist and to operate in order for the tree to exist, right?
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
So this is why, but yet we know the tree does exist. And so therefore we can conclude that in this series of existential causes, just for argument's sake, whether it's one existential caused cause or an infinite number of existential causes, whatever we postulate, we must conclude that there exists an existential cause that is not caused. And what do we mean by that? An existential cause whose essence is identical to existence. An existential cause that has existence by nature and thus doesn't have to derive its existence from something outside itself. Hence, an existential cause that's uncaused. And that, Gary, is what we call God.
Right, yeah. So, going back to our first example, it would be like triangularity. The existence of triangularity is the essence of three sides, three-sided
shape.
That's
right.
Okay.
To speak of an existential cause that has existence by nature is analogous to saying it belongs to the nature of a triangle to have three straight sides.
Yes.
Well, this call that we're saying is necessary in order to explain the very existence of the tree right here and right now is a cause whose nature is to exist. Existence simply is its nature. And that type of existential cause is absolutely necessary in order for the tree to exist right here and right now. For without such a cause, the tree would not exist, because there would be no source from which existence could be derived, the existence of the tree and the existence of whatever existential causes that's explaining the tree to exist right now. So the bottom line is, right here and right now, there must be some existential cause whose nature is to exist and thus doesn't have to derive existence from anything outside itself. And that's what we call God. And Gary, it's from that conclusion, from that understanding of what this type of cause is, we're actually able to deduce the various traditional divine attributes.
Stole my next question. Yeah, because people would say, okay, fine, this is kind of like a blob of existence. Why would you call that God? Right, so go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's all right. Well, first of all, because it's uncaused, right, it's going to be infinite in being. It's not going to be restricted in this mode of being rather than some other mode of being. Because any type of being that, like the frog outside, it's a frog and it's not a plant, okay? And inasmuch as it's restricted to this mode of being, the mode of being a frog, and not a mode of being a plant, it's going to require a cause outside of itself.
Right.
But this existential cause that we've just reasoned to explain why the tree exists, it's an uncaused existential cause. And so it's not going to be restricted to this mode of being rather than some other mode of being. It's going to be unrestricted being. It's going to be infinite being itself. Okay. And then from this, we're able to conclude it's absolutely simple. We've already reasoned that this existential cause we're talking about to explain why the tree exists, its essence is identical to existence. So it's absolutely simple. There is no composition within this cause whatsoever. Furthermore, if it were composed like a tree is composed of various parts, right? Material things are composed of various parts. If this existential cause were composed in any form whatsoever, if it had any sort of composition, it would need a composer, because where there's parts, there needs a cause in order to bring the parts together into a whole. But this existential cause that we're talking about is an uncaused existential cause and therefore can't be composed. So it's absolutely simple. Well, watch this, Gary. If it's absolutely simple and it can have no composition within itself, well, then it can't be material. It can't be a material thing, because all material things are composed, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And then we know it there, and here's the key. Here's the key attribute. It would have to be absolutely one. Because if we postulate, Gary, that there are two of these sort of existential uncaused causes, right? Hmm. Well, in order to distinguish one from the other, one would have to have some distinguishing factor that makes it different from the other, because where there's no difference, there's identity. Remember that principle?
Mm-hmm.
But if one of these existential uncaused causes had a differentiating factor to distinguish it from the other, well, then it would be composed. It would be composed of existence, its active being, plus the differentiating factor. But remember, we said this existential uncaused cause cannot be composed. And so therefore, there can only be one uncaused existential cause. There can only be one cause whose essence is identical to existence. And my dear friend, that, we conclude, is not what we call God, but is God.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it would have to be unlimited or infinite, right? It has to be absolutely simple. So it's not the visible in the parts. And since it doesn't have parts, it can't be material, so it has to be immaterial. It's absolutely unique and one. How about, can it change? Is that possible?
And the answer to that question is no, it would be unable to change in an absolute sense, precisely because it's pure existence itself. It's pure being. It's absolutely simple, because anything that is changed moves from a state of potency to act, right? Mm-hmm. But in order to have that movement from potential to actuality, there necessarily must be a mover. There must necessarily be something to move the thing from the state of potency to the state of act, from the state of potentiality to the state of actuality. But remember, our existential uncaused cause can't be caused, right?
Yeah, right.
So if
right.
it can't have a cause in any sense, well, then in no way can it change. In no way can it move from a state of potency to act, because it is pure actuality itself, in as much as it is pure existence itself. And if no change, well, then, of course, it's atemporal. It's beyond all time whatsoever. This is what we call the eternality of God, and that necessarily flows from the immutability of God. So these are all of the classical divine attributes of God, which we can deduce from the notion of an uncaused existential cause, a cause whose essence is identical to its existence.
Yeah, very good. Wow. Well, I'm so glad you're the guest sensei, because, man, that was a beautiful presentation on proof of the existence
Thank
of that.
You.
But you were going to add
and
one?
Here's the last piece of the puzzle before we dismiss here in our dojo session, right?
Okay.
In all of this process, something that's been a red thread that's been running through is, notice, Gary, anything whose essence is distinct from existence, not only does it need a cause in order to derive its existence to come into being, but it's going to need that cause for its existence right here and right now.
Yes.
If its nature cannot explain why it came into existence, well, then its nature cannot explain why it exists here and now.
Right.
So this existential cause, this existential uncaused cause that we reason to, Gary, is not necessary just for the tree to come into being, to initially receive its act of existence, but it's necessary for that tree to have its relation to the act of existence right here and right now. So it's this existential uncaused cause that is the continuous cause of the tree's existence, which distinguishes it from nothing. And Gary, not only the tree, but you and me. And that, my friend, is a reason to be grateful for this existential uncaused cause, for without that existential uncaused cause, we would lapse into nothingness.
Absolutely. And where can they get Prepare the Way real quick?
Shop.catholic.com.
All right, shop.catholic.com, everybody. Thank you, Carlo. Appreciate you coming on board.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate you having me, man. It was fun.
All right, God bless. All right, everybody, coming up next week, you know, I gave a little teaser. We're going to have Carl Keating on Debating Catholicism. Jewish convert Roy Shulman's going to join the dojo, and also blue-collar apologist John Martinoni. And finally, radio host Matt Swain. So that's going to be a packed show next week. Coming up next, we have a dynamic duo of Catholic Talk Radio, the Terry and Justin Show. Don't want to miss it. I'm Gary Mitsuda. Thank you for listening. God bless.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.